And Mark Holmes with us as we talk about In the Beginning. That's his work, The Flood of Noah, and just going back into antiquity. We'll take your calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Mark Holmes with us. We're going to take your calls in just a second as we talk about his work, In the Beginning. Mark, so let's look at what happened to Noah after the flood. Where did he go? What did he do?
Well, after the flood, you've really got a completely different world that exists. And you have Noah, apparently his wife, and three sons, and apparently their wives. And, of course, the animal occupants on the ark. From there, you've got an entire civilization that springs up. Now, the question is, how does an eight-person campsite develop into an ancient world? And I think there's a couple of things that you have to give consideration to here, not the least of which is the fact that these people, as they came off the ark, had a tremendous amount of knowledge already from the life that they lived prior to the ark. In other words, they didn't need to discover how to do certain things, how to build a structure to live in, how to put together fire or things of this nature. They weren't having to discover everything new. They had that. They brought that over with them. The other thing that you have to consider is, as this particular ancient civilization begins to grow and to expand, how does the concept change at that point? You have a world that was destroyed by the Creator for a very specific reason. When you get to the new world, you would think that all of those problems have been resolved, and that these people who get off the ark, Noah, his three sons, their wives, would now have a firm understanding of who this Creator is, why he created the world. All questions are answered, they're settled, and we can go forward in peace and harmony forever. And we find just the opposite, George. And there's got to be a reason for that. It leads into a fascinating question of how can you have all of the answers and still go in the wrong direction? And I think that's a fascinating human study that I'm currently working on right now. And it's very exciting stuff.
It sure is. Okay, to the phones we go. Johnny in Knoxville, Tennessee, to get us started. Johnny, go ahead.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good, Johnny. Thank you so much for calling.
I've got a comment and a question. I believe that there's tons of evidence for the flood. I look at the oceanic ridge. I've also looked at the continental divide. I've actually been in caverns where there was, like what you were talking about, tons and tons of water. You could actually see the spinning motion on top of the cavern where the water actually spun, but the water is no longer there. And that's where we get a lot of these caverns. The Lost Sea is actually one of them out here in Tennessee where I live. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that. And another question I was going to ask you, have you ever heard, I know that when Noah built the ark, he was about 500 years old, and I think it took him about 100 years before he actually entered the ark. Have you heard of Dr. Kent Hovind's theory about a canopy over top of the earth and about how the oxygen would have been blocked in, so we would have lived a lot longer, and Noah would have had this type of intelligence where, you know, not only maybe DNA could have been brought onto the ark, but even babies or, you know, eggs or whatever to conserve space and to conserve time for repopulation?
Yeah, both of these are very interesting questions. One of the, I get to travel places from time to time, and one of the places I went several years ago was in Kentucky, and we got to tour mammoth caverns, mammoth caves. It was interesting that they told us that these caves at one point in time, this entire area of Kentucky, was underwater, and there was all kinds of evidence in here that this was once an oceanic area, but that was millions of years ago, and it has since dried up and things of that nature. I think the evidence points us to a certain conclusion, The question becomes, what do we do with the evidence? How do we interpret it? There's no question that many of these caverns that we look at, many of these caves, these subterranean areas, there's no question they were filled with water at one time. I believe in the original creation of the earth, it's quite possible that all of these caverns were present, filled with water, and that that water flowed throughout the earth. And that's just a fascinating area to really just step back and consider what we see today and what it may have been like in the past. And again, I say there's evidence there. The question is, what do we see in the evidence and how do we interpret it? And everybody is slightly different in what they bring from that. You ask an interesting question about the canopy, and I want to talk about that for just a minute because it's something that really, as you go into the book of Genesis and some of the other ancient manuscripts, you don't really see it brought up. It's just not there, but yet there's this concept that there was a canopy over the earth at one particular given time. The first century historian, Jewish historian Josephus, mentions this, and he brings it up, so he had the concept that it was there. I looked at a lot of the early church writings, the early ancient documents, because I wanted to find some evidence that it was there. And I came up with two things. Number one, if it was there, how would they know it? And number two, if it was there, it certainly isn't there now, because we know that there's no specific hard and fast canopy around the globe that traps in all of these particular things and presents a different type of an environment. There's two people that I researched pretty extensively in this. One is Dr. Carl Baugh, B-A-U-G-H. The other is Dr. Walter Brown. And both of these gentlemen are staunch creationists. They believe in a young earth. They believe in creation. Both are very versed in the realms of science, and they are adamantly opposed on this question of a canopy. Was it there? Was it not there? One believes it was. Dr. Ball believes it was. He has all kinds of evidence for it. Dr. Walter Brown believes, no, it wasn't. He has all kinds of reasons why he believes, no, it wasn't. So it's an interesting question, was there a canopy? The one thing we know for sure that we can point to from science is that there was a time in our past when this world was vastly different, when we had larger animals, larger plant life, we had a richer oxygen atmosphere. That has been verified and it's not questioned. The question is, when was that? Was that millions of years ago? Was that during the time of Noah? What caused that environment? That's the question. And again, we get back to a point where the evidence isn't disputed. It's the interpretation of the evidence that comes into question.
You know, Mark, as your research has shown, there's some similarities, some disparities between your research and what Genesis tells us. Why is it different? What happened?
Well, I think the thing that I tried to keep in mind is that what Genesis is presenting for us is a quick, almost a bullet point, step by step. This is creation. We see that in just a handful of verses in one chapter, in the first chapter of Genesis. I think 25, 26 verses. You can read through that entire text, George, in less than 5 minutes. And that describes 6 days worth of creation, and then the Lord rested. I think that there has to be a greater picture there. And so in the book, we took some time in one chapter of the book where we went back and we looked at the creation account itself and tried to go step by step through the creation account, examining each step of the way through it. And the question that we had to ask and really had to deal with is, the world that we know today, is it comparable in any way to the world that God created according to what Genesis chapter 1 tells us?
I think it's totally different.
Is it representative? Yeah, it's the same world, but I agree with you. It is not comparable. The world we live in today is a junkyard by comparison to the pre-flood world. I mean, we've got cracks in the crust all over the world. We refer to them as fault lines, and we just accept them as, you know, a part of the way our planet is built. But these things, you know, one little slip and that little movement results in tremendous amounts of destruction over a large area. And we just accept that as a common way of life. And you have to ask yourself, if the Creator fashioned this planet with fault lines and inherent earthquakes, tremors, and things of that nature that could be so massively destruction, how in the world could he give his own assessment of this as, oh, this is good. This is good. This is just what I have planned. We've got leftover remnants from the ice age at both poles. We've got stretches of deserts and wastelands on every continent that, for the most part, are totally uninhabitable. I mean, yes, there's some life there, but very, very little. We've got radiation that comes in from the sun that breaks us down on a molecular level. Less than 20% of this planet is actually inhabitable. Less than 20%.
Yeah.
But yet, when you get to the end of the creation account, you know, God writes his own review and gives himself a 5-star rating. Everything is not only good, but it's very good. And so I have to question, is what we see today representative of the ancient world? And the only conclusion is, no, it's not. Not on any level.
Let's go to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Donella is with us. Hi there. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to ask a question and then comment on something you said a little bit ago.
All right. Can you go rush and turn your radio off for us?
Oh, sure.
Turn that radio down. There you
epic,
go.
Epic of Gilgamesh. Humans had webbed hands and webbed feet, and was Noah the first human created without webbed hands and webbed feet? Do you know anything about this or have any theories on this?
Huh. Webbed feet.
Webbed feet. That's an interesting question. The Epic of Gilgamesh comes to us from the Babylonian culture. It is, for all intents and purposes, their version or their representation of the flood, but it's a lot more than that. Gilgamesh, as a historical figure, goes a lot deeper than just the flood aspects of things, and it's a fascinating read, the Epic of Gilgamesh. The question that comes into being is, hey, this is a lot older than the Bible, so the Bible takes their version from this. Well, you have to question as to how old is the Bible version that's there. Was it written by Moses or was it compiled by Moses? And if it was compiled by Moses, where did it come from? Where did he get his information? Moses, we knew, grew up in Egypt. Were there documents in Egypt that Moses pulled from to get this? Obviously, the stories and the representation and documentation we have in the Bible come to us from a Hebrew slant or a Hebrew perspective. It's their culture. It's not necessarily our culture. It's their culture. When you look at Gilgamesh, it's the Babylonian culture. It is a different language. The question being, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Well, if the documentation that Moses is working from dates back to the time of Noah, who dates back to a pre-flood world, and Gilgamesh dates to a same type of time period, then you've got these two stories coming from the same time period, just being related through the auspices of two different cultures. With regard to the web feet, I'm not overly familiar with that.
What a great story, though, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, well, it's something that I just made a note of that to do a little digging and research. So I'll be spending some time with Google over the weekend, I'm sure. But that's something, yeah, I've come across it briefly, but I'm not overly familiar with that. I do not think Noah had webbed feet or webbed I have to come out and say that. I don't think that he did, but I'll definitely spend some time researching a little bit. It's a fascinating question.
Kent, Ohio. Don's with us east of the Rockies. I'll be in Kent, Ohio in a few months at a major event. Hey, Don, go ahead.
Hey, God bless you, Brother George. Great program. Mark, regarding your canopy search, you'll find the answer in Job 37:18. Job refers to the canopy as a molten looking glass. If you go to the book Creation's Tiny Mystery by Dr. Robert Gentry, he kind of explains now for using the word creation, the good doctor lost his credentials to do any research at Los Alamos Nuclear Labs and also Lawrence Livermore Labs. He should have used the term instead of creation, nature's tiny mystery, but the canopy was the reason why in Genesis 6:14, the ark was hermetically sealed. It claims that it was pitched or tarred inside and out. Once the atmospheric pressure was lost, it decreased. All the vapor in the atmosphere condensed, and you had, according to Clarence Birdseye's research in 1922, this ice age. It quickly frozen. It's like when you get these little BB guns, you know, that have the CO2 cartridge. You let the air out real quick. That cartridge instantly, freezes. It'll actually burn your hand. So that's what we have there. I think, you know, maybe that would help you out. I highly suggest that you check out the book, Nature's Tiny Mysteries. God bless you guys. You're doing a great job.
Great call. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, Don. I appreciate that. I made a note of Robert Gentry, and I'll definitely look into that book. I'm an avid reader, and on occasions I'll get a email from Amazon saying, "Hey, you haven't ordered anything lately. What's wrong? Are you okay?" So I'll definitely get in there and do some research on that one. Thank you, Don.
Mark, so your next research project will be what?
Well, the next research project that I'm putting together right now is really to go into a little bit greater depth of some of the things that we mentioned in passing in this book, but really felt like they would be too much of a rabbit hole to get into. So we kind of mentioned them in passing. We want to get back into them a little bit deeper into a new book called My End of the Circle. These are circular arguments. I don't know that there's any hard and fast, hey, this is correct, everybody else is wrong, but we want to explore some of those things, and some of those things would include the nature of Eden itself. Where was it? When was it destroyed? Some of the things going on in Eden. You have the fall of man. Did Adam and Eve have children in the garden before they were outside of the garden? We're going to explore that and try to explore also the nature of sin itself. Sin is a very mysterious concept. It's presented throughout the Bible, but what exactly is sin? Why is sin such a separating factor between the Creator and His creation? So we're going to try to explore some of those things in the next book, which is called My End of the Circle, and hopefully we'll have that out by late summer or early fall.
Okay, very good. We'll take a break in a moment, Mark. Your work is fantastic. Was it difficult to research all this?
I would tell you that, George, it was riveting to research this. The more I researched, the deeper I wanted to dig. Obviously, this is a fascinating topic, and the only thing that I can ask of people is to try to go in. Obviously, as I said before, this is a polarizing issue. We all have, you know, our perspective and our side of the argument, but try to suspend that just a little bit. Open yourself up to questions, ask questions, be willing to challenge what you believe, look at evidence, and see if your perspective changes even in the slightest. I want to warn people going in, if you pick up my book and read it, it's probably not going to be what you expect. I don't care which side of the aisle you're on, it's not going to be what you expect, but it might make you think about a lot of the things that you believe, and if it does, we've accomplished our goal.
Okay, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls in just a second on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest, Mark Combs. Don't forget our Friday night program, of course. It'll be those special open lines. And we're going to come back in a moment and wrap things up with your final calls. Welcome back. Mark Combs with us. Mark, what other aspects of Genesis fascinate you?
I think the early portions of Genesis are so fascinating because they leave so much open for us. But when you get to the backside of the flood and you begin going there, you've got another set of genealogies, which, let's be honest, that's not the most exciting reading to get into, but all of these names were mentioned for a specific reason, and there's a lot of things that we can learn just from doing research of some of those names. And from there, it begins to trace the history of that particular bloodline that was preserved through the flood and point us towards a future birth of the promised Messiah. And I think a lot of those things are woven into Genesis, and sometimes our familiarity with the Bible stories, we tend to overlook the general purpose of everything was to preserve a bloodline for the coming Messiah.
I've got to ask you this. Do you believe in a God? You have to, I guess, based on all this.
I do, but I have one of my best friends is an atheist, and I will tell you, I absolutely love the guy. We have some of the most fascinating conversations. George, one of the things that saddens me the most is that there's people on both sides of this argument, and they're so bitter against each other that they just want to prove the other one wrong, and they can't have any intelligent conversation with each other to where they can, you know, learn from each other in any aspect whatsoever. I absolutely love this guy. We have some of the most fantastic conversations. And he will tell me, I don't believe anything that you believe, but I'm absolutely fascinated by it.
No knockdown, drag-out fights, huh?
Never. And the one thing he's taken me to task on is he says, Mark, he says, you're just not very, you don't try to push me to your belief very hard. He says, you know, if I believed what you believe, there's a train on the track and it's coming to run me over and you're not trying to get me off the track. And I've told him, I said, look, my job is to, you know, point people towards Christ and towards the Creator. He did the work. I can't take you off the track even if I wanted to. All I can tell you is the experience that I've had. And if you're willing to open yourself up, then the onus is on God to, you know, bridge those gaps of communication. And we kind of wrapped up the book with a little bit of that.
Okay, let's go to the phones again. We have John in Los Angeles. Hey, John, go ahead.
How are you doing? I was getting back to that comment that he made on the ark, on how not much has changed after the flood with people. It's an interesting question because I've thought of it before as to why people seem to be the same. I mean, you know, bad continues and,
sure,
and you hear wars and all sorts of things. So you think, is humanity doomed? Because, I mean, you know, not much has changed from before. I mean, you can see all that's going on. So I wonder what your, you know, partial perspective is on it.
Why hasn't it changed, Mark?
I think this gets back to the dynamic of Noah's three sons. And, when you look in Genesis, it just says Noah had three sons and here's their names. And then when you get on the backside of the flood, it says his three sons had these sons and their sons had these sons, and you get into the whole genealogy thing. But I think it gets back to Noah's three sons. He had three that are mentioned in Genesis, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And out of those three sons, we did some research in a number of ancient documents. And one of the things that I came up with is the fact that these three sons were drastically different. I believe that Shem and Japheth were born very close to each other. The Bible, in their genealogy, lists them not in the order that they were born, but in their order of importance. In the book of Jasher, we have them identified in the order that they were born, and it tells us that Japheth was born first. This is borne out in the genealogies that we find in Genesis chapter 10, but you really have to do a lot of breakdown to kind of put those pieces together. The book of Jasher spells it out for us quite blatantly. Japheth is born first, Seth is born second, and it says that both of these children are born to the wife of Noah, who is named as Naama. It doesn't say that Ham was born to her. It doesn't say that he was born immediately after the first two. That opens a completely different realm of questions and research of who is Ham, when was he born, what is his backstory. My personal belief is that he may have been a lot younger than the other two brothers. And I also am open to the concept that he may have been a stepbrother as opposed to their blood brother born of the same mother. And we go into that in a little bit of detail in the book. I'm not hard and fast on that, but I think it's an interesting concept that's worthy of being explored. Well, if Ham is a lot younger And if Ham has a different mother than the other two, then his perspective after the flood may be entirely different. And this is something that we're still researching and digging into. But I think that gets into the aspect of you've got three brothers, and they were not identical in their personalities, their beliefs, and certainly their descendants were not sharing the same beliefs aspects. We see that borne out today. In any family, there's disputes, there's arguments. As the family goes through generations, some of those generations drift apart. That's human nature, and I don't think it's any great mystery.
Sodom and Gomorrah, do you think it was destroyed by a nuke?
I think it was definitely destroyed by an act of God. It's one that the question of nuke does come up. I think that's something that Zachariah Sitchin points to. There's also the question of, you know, was it struck by a meteorite?
Sure. It's one or the other, I think. One or the other.
I think it was obviously a judgment. There's no question about that. It was obviously a judgment of God.
Now we go back to the phones. We go to Melissa, first-time caller, Wichita, Kansas. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, sir. I had a question. Have you heard about the expanding Earth theory? My brother showed it to me on a website. It was on his cell phone. But it showed how the Earth expanded and the continents drifted apart,
yep,
which would kind of explain the cracks. The other thing was, is there was a couple of days ago, maybe a week ago, there was a show, George, that you talked about that the moon may possibly be an artificial construct because there are civilizations and records that say that Venus ruled the Earth, ruled the skies, and things like that. So it was a time before the moon. If the moon's an artificial construct, per se, is it possible that by it being moved into our orbit that it would cause the Earth to expand and possibly the flood? Just something to consider.
Well, and also, let me bring this up. I haven't asked you about this, Mark. There are a number of people who believe in Planet X. Of course, you know Zachariah Sitchin and his theory of this extra planet Nibiru. They think that's what caused the flood of Noah. Tidal waves, all kinds of things, gravitational pulls as this extra huge planet came around the planet. Hey, you know what? Can't rule it out.
I don't think you can rule it out. I mean, a lot of people want to, and it's kind of unfortunate. There's so many things about quote-unquote Planet X that are viable research. There's also so many things about it that are, for lack of a better term, they just muddy the water, and they make it a more difficult concept to take on a serious level. And, you know, that really disturbs me on some levels. I'd like to address her question of the expanding Earth, and then if we could come back to Planet X, I'd love to do that because I think that's actually very, very fascinating. The idea of the expanding Earth is one that I did come across, and I approached it from a little bit of a different aspect. Now, there is a video on the Internet by a gentleman named Neil Adams. He's actually the graphic artist that did work on Batman. The video that she's talking about is fascinating. It really is. There's a lot of people that are supporters of that. There's a lot of people that you know, try to discredit Neil Adams with that. And we actually did mention it in the book. I went back to a number of geologists, Samuel Warren Carey, Wagner, and a German geologist whose name is slipping my mind at just this minute. I'm 53 years old and drawing a blank, and I apologize for that. But we went back to these guys, and they did independent research. At the time they did their research, they really weren't aware of each other. But one of the things that all three of them came up with was the concept that all of our continents were at one time connected as one large landmass. Now, Alfred Wegener saw it as one large landmass on one side of the globe, with water on the other side of the globe.
A continental drift, right?
Exactly. The other two gentlemen didn't see it that way. They saw a Earth that was at one point in time 50% smaller than the Earth and the planet that we have today, and this led to the concept of the expanding Earth. Excuse me.
That's the Australian. Wasn't he an Australian geologist?
There's one Australian geologist,
Sam Carey,
who's actually a gentleman in in Germany who wrote a book, and I apologize that his name slips my mind. Maybe during our, you know, maybe I'll be able to come up with it here as we're talking. But we referenced both of their books, and the back of my book, there's over 20 pages of footnotes. So if people go, well, where did Mark come up with this idea? There's a number, and it'll tell you where that came from, and it'll tell you what
Klaus Vogel
page and all that.
Was that his name?
Yes, sir.
Klaus Vogel.
Yeah. So the other question she asked about was the moon. And I really believe the moon was part of the original creation. There's a lot of people who believe that the moon came apart or came about after the flood. I believe it was a part of the original creation. I believe it was there when everything was originally created.
Celestially, you don't think it was towed into place?
I think it's been moved. I really do think it's been moved.
By?
And then that'll take us to Planet X.
What moved
the question. You brought up the question, George, and I think it's something that's worthy of exploration. There are a number of points in our Earth's history that we can point to tremendous devastation. The flood is one. We've been talking about it tonight. But prior to the flood, there is an event that's recorded in the Book of Jasher that's a flooding of the Gihon River. The Gihon River was one of the four rivers that flowed out of Eden. The interesting portion of that is that the Book of Jasher says that one third of the earth was destroyed by this flood. So it was a large historical event that happened. We also have, after the flood, the Tower of Babel, and the things that happened with that and the destruction of the tower. The Book of Jasher says the earth opened up and swallowed the tower. We get a little bit later into history and we find some things that are recorded in Egypt and China, where they point to an extremely large object in the sky that was prevalent for a while. And we have a number of different things as we track through history that we've noted in the book. And what I tried to do was put all of those in their perspective time period, and it's amazing to me how regular the intervals are between these particular events. Does it point to something? It seems like it certainly would.
Marcus, Terre Haute, Indiana, it's your turn, Marcus. Go ahead.
Thanks, George. Mm-hmm. Great story, great topic tonight, and a great guest. My question is on the two of every flesh that God ordered Moses to take onto the ark. I think this might be overlooked also. Why can't there also be other people? Why couldn't God have sent, just like he sent the animals two by two, sent different people? The races that we see today, they had to have been protected somehow. How would they have come about, you know, many years later, if we're all descendants of Noah and his children? And if your guest can elaborate on that, I know there's another contradiction in Genesis also with the creation of Adam, and whether him and they were the original people, which it says on the sixth day God created man. On the eighth day is when God created Adam and Eve and created someone to tend the garden. And I think a lot of people overlook that, so I'd like to get your guest's take on that.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead for us, Mark.
All right. While he's brought up, I think, if I've got it written down correctly, three very interesting topics, and we'll try to cover all of them real quickly. The two of each kind and the concept of were there other people on the ark. The ancient documents that I found, the ancient documents that I used, the scriptures, Genesis, which you've heard me refer to, the Book of Jasher, which you've heard me refer to, and the Book of Enoch. I also use the Book of Jubilees. All of these particular documents indicate that there were eight people on the ark. When you get over into the New Testament book of Peter, it indicates there were eight people on the ark. Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their wives. That is a pretty solid indication. Were there more? I don't see anything that indicates there were more. Now, he raises the question of races and how do we get the different races and things of that nature. Keep in mind, there is one race, the human race. We're all different, but there's one race, the human race. We're all human. As you get into a culture where you have a culture developing and growing in a particular civilization, you have a small breeding group, and as that smaller group of breeding individuals begin to develop and expand their culture, different features, physical features, come out and begin to be accentuated. And I think that's where you see some of our differences. Excuse me, I apologize. But as far as, you know, our distinctive likenesses, George, I'm a part of the human race just as you are a part of the human race, just as if we had a caller from another continent.
You think?
They would be a part of the human race. Okay, so we're all human. The other question that he brought up was the two of each kind. And this is something that I really dug into in Chapter 5 because I do think it's misunderstood. I think it's read over way too fast, and I think we miss it. Genesis 7 says that the Lord told Noah to take two of, he said, take two of each, the male and his female. And then in the very next verse, he says, and of the clean beasts, take by sevens, the male and his female. Now, when we read, take two, the male and his female, we read, okay, two, one male, one female. When we read, take sevens, the male and his female, we read, seven males, seven females. That's just naturally the way our mind would interpret it. So we see the clean animals, he took seven males, seven females, total of 14. We see the unclean animals, he took one male, one female. That's not what the text says. The text says, take two, the male and his female. That's two pairs. And it's very evident that if it refers to pairs when he's talking about sevens, it also refers to pairs when he's talking about two. So the breakdown in the head count would be slightly different. As far as two of each kind, no, there was four. I think it's pretty evident that there was four. When you get to the clean animals, there were seven pairs. There were not two pairs.
Fascinating. Mark, do come back again, will you?
Thank you so very much. I enjoyed it, and I appreciate you letting me be a part of your program. George, my website again, markcombsauthor.com. Thank you so much for having me on the show. The
name of his work is called End the Beginning. Amazing work. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.